would be a pretty sweet deal to have as your daily work, awakening the heart of humanity. Well, actually, it needs to be our conscious daily work. And Roland McCrady with the Heart Math Institute is pursuing this to a depth that is eye-opening, exciting, and very, very doable. I'm Robin with Tributaries. Join us, won't you? Roland, we chatted in the mid-90s when I was surprised to hear about heart rate variability, and I'm wondering if you would describe what it is for your audience, and do you think it's still widely unknown?
Sure, Robin. Well, HRV, which is the acronym, of course, for heart rate variability, is becoming much more known. In fact, there are many even consumer products now based on heart rate variability. The first in the consumer space was with athletics to, you know, enhance our training and performance and these types of things. But for the listeners probably who may not have heard of it before, when we're talking about heart rate variability, it's quite different than heart rate. So most people know what heart rate is. It's just simply how many times does the heart beat in a minute. But in reality, our heart rate is changing with each and every heartbeat. So in other words, what we do is we measure the time interval between each consecutive pair of heartbeats. And when you look at that, you find that that time is always varying. And the reason that there's so much interest now in both in clinical and medicine and stuff, but also in performance enhancement and many other areas, is that there's a lot of important information that we can gain about our health and how well our brain's working, how well the heart and brain are communicating with each other from looking at heart rate variability. So it gives us this really awesome window into the workings and what's going on in the dynamic interactions within our autonomic nervous system and in the communication between the heart and brain.
Yes, and it's so fascinating, really, that it has become a predictor of various health conditions. And it's not just talking about, well, how healthy is your heart, is it? You've been able to show all kinds of problems that might be heading someone's way.
Well, correct, Robin. This is a little complicated. I'll try and make it as simple as I can here. There's many different aspects or types of information we can actually pull out of heart rate variability. So the first and the most common that people know about is how much of it do we have? How much variation is there? Now, this is important in the context you just brought up, risk prediction, in that we have more of it when we're young. And it gets less as we age. So there's a natural decline in the amount of heart rate variability that a person has across age. In fact, it's almost a linear relationship. So if we're on a kind of a healthy lifestyle and trajectory, we can tell within about 2 years how old somebody is just by looking at their HRV. So it's one of the best measures that we know of for biological aging. Here's the thing, though. The amount of HRV we have for our age is lower than it should be. That is indeed a predictor of future health problems. And it's a pretty strong independent predictor. In fact, I would say it's far more important than what your cholesterol level is and these types of other measures. If somebody has low HRV, it's a pretty serious indicator that something in the future will go amiss. In fact, low HRV, and whenever I say that from now on, it means related to your age, is correlated with almost every major disease there is. And the thing here is that the HRV will decline, in some cases can decline, even a couple of years before the onset of symptoms. So we don't necessarily know what it might be, you know, whether it's a heart problem or a sudden cardiac death or cancer or metabolic syndrome or what might happen in the future, but we just know that something's amiss with low HRV. That's the risk prediction context, and health status is also called. In addition to the how much, is we also look at the, I'm going to say, quality of the rhythm. And that what I mean by that is the pattern. And this is where an image is worth 1,000 words here. But when we're feeling stressed, for example, and what I mean by that is we might be feeling impatient or anxious or fearful. These types of feelings, what you see, independent of how much, is that the actual heart rhythm is what's reflected in HRV, by the way, becomes very chaotic looking, very jagged looking. And that is reflecting that the activity in our higher brain systems, which is then affecting the output of the autonomic nervous system, is very erratic. So quite literally, the neurons in our brain and in our nervous system are getting out of sync. Now, that is also interrelated to a certain degree with the amount of HRV we have, because there's two main reasons we have low HRV. The most common we see, when we do analysis for clinics all around the world, is long-term stress that is depleting our nervous system. And it finally ends up with lowered HRV and a higher risk, basically accelerated aging. Now, the other can be a health condition will also be a factor in low HRV. So looking at the pattern of the HRV is also really important in addition to how much. On the other hand, when we're feeling things like appreciation or kindness and compassion, you know, the more what we would call heart qualities, the rhythm of the heart can radically shift into what we call a coherent rhythm, which looks like a sine wave, by the way, kind of pattern in the heart rhythm. Over 400 independent studies now have basically shown that when we learn how to be in a more coherent state, that has a huge range of benefits, both for our physical health, but also mentally and emotionally. We're able to maintain our composure better in stressful situations, to think better, make better decisions and choices. So I could go on and on here, but that's good.
The platform from which you can speak from can lead so many places. Roland, you've been privy for so long that the most basic source of stress is the synchronicity of the heart and brain. So that's underneath, it's underlying the perhaps visual or emotionally held stress. Talk about that a little bit.
We could talk about that from a couple of different angles, but I think maybe the most useful one would be, I'll invite the listeners to this, just to think back over the past few days, week, whatever. Has there been a time or a situation where you were asked to do something or thought you should do something? It could be anything around buying something or an interaction with somebody, whatever it might be. And you just had a deeper inner sense that maybe wasn't the best choice. I'll call it intuition or feeling. Or it could be the other way around. You didn't want to do something but had an inner prompting that might be the best thing to do. Maybe go apologize to somebody you said something, you know, mean to or something. And we just don't do it. We go with the, I'll call it the hedge perspective, the maybe ambitions. And then later we find out that, wow, I really should have listened to that inner prompting I had. Without going into all the science of it here, what I'm really suggesting here is that lack of alignment between our deeper inner voice, I often call it our inner GPS, and we can call this the head and the heart, the head voice or the heart voice. It's that lack of alignment that really underlies the vast majority of people's stress. And I would say globally, that's the biggest issue we have. So a lot of what we do here at HeartMath is really helping people align with what we call the heart's intelligence or the intelligence of the heart. Now, this is not making one a bad or good. I want a brain and I want it to work really well. But what our research and like I said, 400 plus studies have now shown is that when we can get the heart into a coherent state, that does literally increase, when we're talking about neural activity, the synchronization between the heart and brain. And that opens up people's intuition. The brain works better, so we make better choices, better memory, all these types of cognitive benefits as well.
Yes. And when you look back, or when we look back in history to the beginnings of the yogis or the deep meditations, are your practices that you've developed through HeartMath similar, or are there many of them? Are they very varied?
What we call the HeartMath techniques, which is one slice of a much larger pie of HeartMath, are in some ways similar to other techniques that have been around for a long time, but in other ways they're very different. Your question kind of begs me to say that one of the most common, or probably the most common thing in all the world's religions and many of the philosophies that have been around forever, thousands of years, whether it's Christianity, Islam, Buddhism, you know, Judaism, the list goes on, is that the heart is the access point to a deeper wisdom and a deeper source of intelligence. You know, that's why the heart's associated with courage and, you know, all these sayings we have in our language. You know, play from your heart, sing from your heart, go to your heart. It knows the answer. It's so common in our language is that people already have an intuitive understanding of that. In fact, the past director of our education division, one of his passions was a study of world religions, actually did an in-depth analysis of that and said, yes, this is in fact the most common characteristics of that as this idea of the heart. In that regard, our research is very supportive of that concept or that idea that people have intuitively known for a long time. One of the differences, there's about 8 core heart math techniques that have different applications. Only one of those is what I would call a meditation-type technique, a heart-focused or heart-based meditation. Pretty much all of the other ones are really about how do we self-regulate our emotions and maintain our composure in day-to-day life, in the flow of the day. These are really techniques that are meant to be used in the moment. So that's one of the big differences. And we take getting that heart coherent very seriously because there's just too much research that shows that that's where we get the best outcomes. So all the techniques that we teach and have developed also lead to a measurable shift in physiology that we can actually measure and be reflected back in real time so that you see this shift into an optimal physiological state that underlies getting the heart and brain in sync and the brain itself more synchronized, which allows us to make better decisions, better choices, be more emotionally stable.
And here we are on radio. And radio is one thing, but we are broadcasters probably way beyond our imagination. And I'm wondering what you've experienced or experimented with both personally and through research being done.
Now, Robin, you used the word broadcasters, which is very, very appropriate. Is that kind of what you want me to speak to?
Yes, because of our energy field. And then once we do get in sync, heart and brain or mind, that broadcast goes further and deeper and I think beyond what our imagination is really even thinking at the moment or in this time.
That is true. And some of our latest research is actually taking that to a much larger level than what you might even expect. So for the listeners here to understand what I'm talking about, I talk a lot about energetics these days.
Yay.
And, you know, the biofield, which is the new term now these days. So this is measurable. Now, let me give you an example. When you put electrodes on the body, like across the chest to measure the electrocardiogram, you know, the heartbeat, done, you know, millions of times, probably literally every day by doctors and cardiologists around the world. When we put electrodes, whether it's on the brain to measure the brain waves or across the chest to measure the ECG or electrocardiogram, what is being measured quite literally is the flow of current or electricity. That's why it's called the electrocardiogram, after all, the electroencephalograph. So those electrodes are measuring current flow. And by the way, the heart is by far the largest source of these currents in the body, many, many times greater than what brain waves are, about 100 times greater, in fact, the heartbeat is. So basic physics, kind of physics 101, is whenever you have a flow of current or electricity, you create a magnetic field. Now, the electrodes don't see that. That's a different instrument to measure the magnetic field that's produced by the flowing current, and that's called a magnetometer. Now, one of the qualities, and by the way, my first career was I was a communication engineer for Motorola, so it's something I know a little bit about here. And this is we commonly use cell phones, right? And in a cell phone, we're using what's called the electromagnetic field to carry information. That could be your voice, or it could be the picture, your text message, whatever. Now, the point here is that I want to get to is that cell phones work indoors, right? So it's one of the qualities of magnetic fields is they go through things. That's why cell phones will work even inside of an elevator, right? You can still be on your phone.
Yes.
And carrying that information. Well, the magnetic component by the heart, when the heart beats, easily radiates right through the tissues and out into the space around us. And we can measure this externally to the body with magnetometers. And with today's instruments, you can actually measure the magnetic field of the heart around 3 feet away from the body. And using the same instrument with the same settings, you can measure a brain wave about an inch away. So obviously at the energetic level, the field level, the heart is the dominant, by far the big player here.
It makes it for a safer world.
Yeah. And we were able to very early on, this goes probably, I don't know if we might have even talked to this back in the 90s, because we were doing research on this back then and we kind of moved past this. We've proven this and published it in many ways now, that these fields, the magnetic field produced by the heart, is carrying information related to our emotional state. In fact, we can do back using the very similar techniques that I would have used back in my Motorola days to decode or demodulate the information being carried by the field. You can do the same thing to the heart's field and clearly see different information, I call them information patterns, being carried by the field that relate back to our both our heart rate variability patterns and our emotional state, because they're all kind of intertwined there. Now, the field probably carries much more information that we don't know about yet or can't prove yet, but for sure our emotional state. So what I'm saying, Robin, is what we feel inside, you know, those emotions that we have especially, aren't just contained inside the skin. They are literally being broadcast and radiating externally. And we can measure that. That's how I know that. Now, the next step in our line of research was to say, okay, well, that's pretty neat, but does it... So what? Do these fields, are these fields, the information being carried by these fields, are they received and detected by the nervous systems of other people, and do they have measurable effects on others? And that was actually a pretty easy question to answer. And the answer you probably know is obviously yes. And we published this in a lot of different places. And if anybody's interested in the how we do it and the nitty-gritty of the science of it, you can go to the heartmath.org website to a thing called the under the research tab called Research Library, and there's hundreds of papers that are free to download there, organized by topic. So if people want to get more into the details, but anyway, some of my more favorite studies show that when we're in a coherent state, you know, our own physiology is coherent, we are radiating more coherent information in the magnetic fields, and that does have or can have anyway a lifting effect on others around us. It can actually, in a measurable way, can actually help them come into more balance, more composure. It's not a magic thing. It's, if somebody wants to be mad, you can be coherent and they're going to stay mad if they really want to, but it creates a field environment that makes it a little easier to shift and back into a more balanced or coherent state. So that we can think of this as our personal field environment that does have measurable impacts on others around us. And this has a lot of implications, and we actually teach this in a lot of our programs, the so what of all this. And I'll give you an example. One of the biggest sources of mistakes in business and law enforcement, all types of areas, is miscommunication. Let me ask you this, Robin, and maybe the listeners can ask themselves the same question. I've gotten onto this, so I kind of become more observant of communications than others going on. I'll use this context where you're kind of hearing two people talk and watching what's going on, and one person will say something to the other, you know, and it's, you know, the words are very clear and so on, but what the other person hears and reflects back is totally different than what the person said. And what they're actually reflecting back is what they're feeling in the energetic field from the other person. So, for example, we might be anxious or maybe frustrated about something. That's what we're broadcasting. Even, and that if that doesn't match the words, it creates a mixed message, because unconsciously we're getting the information in the field. And that mismatch is one of the biggest factors leading to miscommunications. Does that make sense, what I'm saying, Robin?
Oh, yes, it makes absolute sense. And it's so important to bring that up.
Right, right. So that's a very practical context. Now, here's another one. This is where our more recent research has been headed, which we call the Global Coherence Initiative, where we're really looking at the interactions energetically, magnetically speaking, between humanity as a whole and the Earth's magnetic systems. So... as I mentioned, you can measure the field generated by the heart about 3 feet. The field goes much farther. That's the sensitivity of today's instruments. We know just the theory of magnetic fields. They don't stop at 3 feet. This is the sensitivity of the instruments. So some of the more current studies are showing, especially when there's a, I actually call some of the presentations I'm doing these days, how love connects us. And these are based on studies that show that when there's a positive or a strong positive emotional connection between people, that their heart rhythms can literally synchronize. It's amazing to see the data, the degree of synchronization that it can occur. Now, we did this locally, you know, within the magnetic field environment, you know, a few feet, I mean, more than 3 feet away years ago, and published this. But more current studies are showing this can happen non-locally.
Yes, beautiful.
I mean, even people, when people are separated by 5,000 miles.
Mm-hmm.
So what the heck can explain that? One of our suggestions or hypotheses, I can call it, is that we all live within the Earth's magnetic field, or the geomagnetic field. And as it turns out, by the way, let me give a little background here that might help connect some dots. If we time travel back to when we were in science class back in school, most people got to dump some iron filings on a glass plate,
right,
and you put your magnet under it, we had a lot of fun back in school doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
The iron filings all dance around a little bit and basically end up showing you the shape of the field of whatever magnet type magnet you have, right? Now, here's the point. If you recall back when you, if it were visual, I could show you a picture of this. Those iron filings lined up in lines. It wasn't just a homogeneous black blob, you know, showing you the field. They actually are lines. And these are called magnetic field lines. You can actually see them. You can visualize them, but with the iron filings. Now, here's the interesting thing, at least certainly I didn't learn back then in school, is that magnetic field lines can act just like the strings on a stringed instrument, like a guitar. You can actually pluck them, and they vibrate. So magnetic field lines will vibrate. And just like a guitar string, depending upon the length of the string, or the field line in this case, and the tension on it, will change or set its frequency, its resonant frequency, or the note, if you want to talk about it in musical terms.
Mm-hmm.
So the Earth has very long field lines because the geomagnetic field, you know, the geomagnetic field, by the way, that's the North Pole, the South Pole, the thing our compasses align to and tune into, are very long. So they have a low frequency. And what's plucking the field lines of Earth, the magnetic field lines, and causing them to vibrate is the solar wind that's rushing by about 1,000,000 miles per hour. Meanwhile, Earth is turning in that, and so is the sun. And anyway, you get this complex interplay, and the field lines, and their technical term for this is field line resonances, by the way, are vibrating. And one of the most basic, most common field line resonance is a frequency of 0.1 hertz. In frequency language. Now, that's relevant because that is exactly the same frequency of the human coherent heart rhythm. So in other words, when we're in our optimal state personally, our oscillating system, our heart rhythm, our main field, is vibrating at the same frequency as the Earth's fields. Okay?
Yes.
And then also, if we time travel back to science class again, most people either got to play with or have seen most demonstrations these days of tuning forks. If you have two tuning forks,
right,
attuned to the same note, and you tap one, the other one, even though you haven't touched it, will start to vibrate, right? And that's called a resonant coupling. And it's a way of demonstrating that when two systems oscillate or vibrate at the same frequency, you can transfer energy and information between them.
Yes, and it's so wonderful now that not only are you embracing this work, but the technology is enabling you to take it further and further and further and bring out all of this invisible vibration that's happening around us, and we are able to pay more and more attention to it. And especially thank you for all of the research that you've been doing for so long. I'm wondering, do you ever do any research about, we are broadcasters, and then what about when we come across something like very strong EMFs or 5G? Some people are involved in all of that. Are there conscious ways that you've studied to sort of hold at bay and not be affected by things? Or how do you see that?
What I was just sharing about the tuning fork example, and that we're vibrating our hearts at the same frequency as Earth, is that we have the basic physics for understanding how what we're broadcasting isn't only in our local environment, but what I'm suggesting here is that it couples to the larger field of the Earth, which explains how people can be in sync thousands of miles apart, or how mothers, usually mothers, can know that their kids are up to no good or in harm's way when they're thousands of miles away. Right. There has to be something mediating that, the field. So we're both broadcasting and receiving information from the global field. Things I talk a lot about these days is become more conscious and responsible for what we're feeding the field, because it matters.
Absolutely. You know, what this work means and represents for me is the possibilities. When people talk about various reasons for doom and gloom, I can't help but see that there's something else lurking, a light or a grace, I don't know what you want to call it, that just isn't quite in view or isn't quite consciously felt yet. But I just feel like there is so much possibility. Do you feel that too?
Oh, absolutely. And I see it in many, many ways. I mean, even though the stress level on the planet is probably extremely high, more than it ever has been, probably in my lifetime anyway.
Sure.
At the same time, there's a new consciousness emerging right in the middle of that, that is more heart-based. And it kind of would take us in a different direction here, but a whole line of our research we haven't touched on yet is research on intuition. One of the big benefits of being coherent is it increases our access to our deeper intuitive guidance, what we call heart intelligence. So the shift that people are talking about, you know, you hear it all the time, is really, from my perspective, and that is what is increasing now, is the alignment between the heart and brain, so that we're starting to access more of our heart's intelligence. And what I mean by that, Robin, is that I have the physical heart, but there's also a thing that I'm suggesting is also very real, which we call the energetic heart, or it's been called the spiritual heart as well in a lot of the more ancient writings and texts. And that is the bridge. You can think of it as our undivided wholeness, but to the energetic part of our beingness that operates and vibrates in a different dimension. I'm just saying it's a very real thing, but the energetic heart is the bridge of how we access that higher intelligence. And as we become more coherent, think of it as the radio communication between our larger self, whether you want to call it your higher self or your spirit or your soul, whatever term that one chooses or relates to, that the energetic heart is the bridge to that, that allows for our intuition to stream down into our day-to-day consciousness. And that is what increases our personal vibration and elevates us into a new level of awareness. As people do that, they find themselves becoming not only more aware, but kinder, more compassionate, with a lot less stress in life. So that's the shift starting to integrate more of the mind and heart intelligence together. So it's a partnership rather than just a mind-dominated consciousness.
Yes, it's a wonderful partnership. And knowing that our heart speaks to us, it just makes every day you wake up more exciting.
Yeah, and it does speak to us. In fact, we did an online event for the Global Coherence Initiative. It's our annual event. And one of my favorite things that happened, we did a debrief each morning. Hey, you know, did you practice the techniques that we taught yesterday and this kind of thing? And this one woman, she was so excited. She goes, "The heart really does talk to you. God, what a wild discovery. I'm so excited." She actually had heard for the first time the voice of her heart. And it was so neat to hear that.
If you need the science, it's there. Many thanks to Roland McCready from the Heart Math Institute. For anything tributaries related, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. Our podcasts are on all of the usual platforms, and we'd love to hear from you. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.